you as tired as I am, Doug?
Yeah, that's because we did a haunted thing last night.
Yeah, we did.
It was so cool.
And if you've been to the website today, which I know millions of you have already, well, all four of you.
Both of you.
Yeah, both of you have been to the website today. You'll see that we have a special show coming up this Wednesday. It's like confirmed slash tentative, one of those things, but we talked to the Grimstone people last night, namely Mr. Chris, the president, who's just the man, and he's like, I'd love to come on your show. I love you guys with all my hearts, and I want to be part of your show again. So we're going to do a special show because we actually were at the Fenton House. I'm sorry, the Fenton Hotel.
Yeah.
Everything's house, it seems like. And this is different. It's a hotel. We did another, we did some more work with Grimstone yesterday at the Fenton Hotel. And actually, a big, substantial chunk of work—a good, solid 2 hours of audio—we have to analyze.
Right. What I want to say specifically about that is thank you.
Thank
to the
you,
Fenton
yeah.
Hotel staff.
Oh yeah.
It's not a hotel; it's actually a restaurant.
It's a restaurant. Now, yeah.
But they do have the upper floors that were the hotel, and they don't use them, you know, except for storage and stuff. But it's reportedly haunted.
Yeah.
And they want to get down to the bottom of it. They invited Grimstone in again, and we got to tag along, and it was
great,
incredible. And we got to do some experiments, which our dear friend Marcus Leader will be glad to hear that we did the experiments.
Oh, I talked to him already today about it.
Awesome.
So he knows what's going on.
And I did indeed capture the video. It was saving to disk as I left to come here to the Warren Winery. Speaking of the Warren Winery.
Oh, yeah.
Why don't I tell everybody who this is and what we're doing?
Why don't you do that, Doug?
This is Ghostly Talk, and I'm Doug.
I'm Scott L.
I'm Will.
And we are live on the internet and on various radio stations throughout the country and perhaps world on Sunday night.
Hard to keep track of.
It is hard to keep track. Mm-hmm. On Sunday nights from 6 p.m. till 9 p.m. Eastern Time, and we're broadcast live out of the Warren Winery, the haunted Warren Winery, I might add. And all we need is a ghost, so we're advertising for one right now.
Yeah.
Then we're replayed. We're replayed throughout the week on various
all types of stuff, all over the
internet
place.
And traditional radio stations throughout the world. So, so you'll hopefully be catching Ghostly Talk in a neighborhood near you.
Yeah, whether it be a podcast or a replay on the computer or somewhere on terrestrial radio, it seems to be getting further and further out there every week. So thank you. We appreciate everybody who wants to help us out getting the word out about this show.
And we hope people like listening and enjoying the incredible people that we talk to and the stuff that we learn, because we're learning along with you.
Oh, yeah.
We don't know all this stuff.
Yeah,
and that's why we bring incredible people on the show.
This is not a scripted thing.
No.
We always like to tell people that. We find that the longer we do this, the less organized we get, and it seems to be the cooler shows we do that way. So the more, figure by the year 2010, we'll never be on time anymore.
Right. it'll be just like real life.
Yeah, exactly. Real life. Now, you know, back in 1847, when I first started ghost hunting, when I really started getting into, like, you know, going out to areas and stuff like that, and this is actually even before I met up with you, Doug, and you, Will, we used to, I got to find places that are haunted. I want to look for places that are haunted.
I detect a segue. This is absolutely incredible.
Don't
I'm going to write
this
down. Well, I need a pen. I'm going to write down that we're having a segue going on right now.
Well,
go ahead.
Back then, you know, we used to try to find places that were haunted, right?
Will was the encyclopedic brain of all haunted locations.
Yeah.
He still is.
Well, this is even before Will's tenure, though.
Oh.
This is back when I was still playing
this
in the band and stuff like that.
This is before we knew Will.
This is back when the...
And my, his encyclopedic knowledge.
Yeah. My first ghost hunting buddy was Scott Binkowski from, MFPS, and now he plays in a band called On Your Face, which we're playing one of their songs tonight, as a matter of fact.
Oh, awesome.
Good stuff, real good stuff. And he was like, he had an interest in this, too. And so we both just started, like, downloading stuff on the internet and writing, getting, you know, printing out these huge, big books of lists from the Shadowlands and stuff like that. And we come across this one place called Morrow Road. Okay, what's Morrow Road? Let's read this thing up. And I remember vividly, we were in our rehearsal room this night before we were getting ready to practice. And, you know, Scott's like, okay, check out this Morrow Road thing, man. I'm like, okay, well, what's this all about? He's like, well, it says here that you go to Morrow Road, you go to the second bridge.
Right.
And you stop your car. I'm going to probably screw this up. You stop your car, and you put your keys
in
the
dashboard.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And then
you honk the horn 3 times.
Or is it flash the headlights 3 times?
This one was honk the horn.
Was it honk the horn 3 times? And supposedly you see a bright light in front of the car.
A bright green light, I think.
Green light, you got it.
Coming toward you.
Coming toward you.
Yeah.
And the thing that grabbed me, whoever wrote this little blurb about Morrow Road said, don't bother trying to get away from this thing, because by the time you get your keys back in the ignition of the car, it'll be in the back seat looking at you. Now, that just sent chills down my spine, and I was afraid of Morrow Road for so long to go there, right? Until, if you've seen the film Afterlife that we were a part of, an independent film back in the day, we actually recorded this thing live. Tom Smith, the guy who did Afterlife, sat in my car, my old Malibu, and we sat there and tried to do this thing. Now, nothing seemed to happen, but it kind of... I guess we could say it broke down the fear of Morrow Road. Regardless of that, though...
Well, the first time we went to Morrow Road...
Yeah.
I had directions how to get there, but not back.
Mm-hmm.
I remember driving back, we couldn't find anything.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I remember that.
but we got there. We didn't know if it was the North Bridge or the South Bridge that they were talking about.
Mm-hmm.
So we...
We ended up going from the north to the south side of the state, I think, trying to find it.
Looking for these bridges, right. Yeah. We found the one, because it's obvious, the North Bridge. And it was... you pulled off onto this little, like, access to a field.
Yeah, yeah.
And then... we all are stepping out of the car. You stepped out the driver's door. The passenger stepped out the passenger door. And I stepped out the back passenger door, the mm-hmm. rear door. And I immediately went into a ditch.
Yes.
So I'm hanging onto the door for dear life. Mm-hmm. I could not feel the bottom of this ditch.
Yeah.
I mean, it was that deep.
Didn't you say you felt hands trying to grab you, too, or something like that?
Well, that was in my recollection, but I don't know if it actually happened there. And I literally had to drag myself up, leveraging the use of the car door to pull me out of this ditch. So that was my first experience of many with falling in ditches.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, you know, let's fast forward here to, like, you know, 4 years, 3-4 years. Somebody signed something. I think they put it on our message board on the Ghostly Talk website.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, hey, have you guys checked out this thing for this film called Morrow Road? And we're like, whoa, hey, antlers pop up. Hey, I know Morrow Road. I've been there before.
Well, since then, we've learned a lot about Morrow Road.
Well, we have learned a lot about that. We've been there numerous times.
And we met Will, who clued us in on all the real stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
Where the bridge really is.
Yeah. But somebody sends us this message, says, hey, you guys should check out this thing for Morrow Road. There's a film being done on this about the Morrow Road. So, of course, you know, antlers pop up again. I go, well, I got to get in contact with this guy. We got to see if we can talk to these people. So this was like months ago, too, mind you.
Right.
We've been trying to pull this together for a real long time.
That was old website stuff.
Old website stuff, too, mind you. You'll never see that ever again. It's all gone. So I end up getting in contact with a gentleman named I'm going to screw this up again. I know I'm going to screw it up. Francis
Sempier?
Sempier.
Yes.
I did it. And I think Francis is on the line right now. Are you there, Francis?
Yes, I am.
Hi, Francis. Thanks for coming on the show. Welcome to Ghostly Talk.
Hello, Scott and Doug. How you doing?
Great, great. And you are, now, what is exactly your title with the film? I mean, you're the head cheese, from what I get. But there's got to be a technical term for that. What is that?
Producer and director.
Producer and director.
Yeah.
To start things off, what inspired you to do a film like this based on The Legend of Morrow Road?
Yeah, you just heard our first experiences with Morrow. Mm-hmm. How did you do? How did you find it, and what made it so intriguing that you wanted to do an independent film about it?
Well, what started was back, I want to say it was September of 2004.
Mm-hmm.
Is when the idea literally first came about to do a film about Morrow Road. Now, understand, I live and have grown up in the township where the legend actually happened.
Yeah, you live right around that area. You're not too far away from us.
Yes, I live literally in that area, which is Clay Township, and one of my best friends, you know, lives, you know, pretty much right on the Morrow Road woods.
Mm-hmm.
He lives one road over, so we kind of grew up on that road, so to speak. We'd hang out there. And so Morrow Road for me actually was nothing new as far as when the idea first came to do the film. We knew a fair amount about it.
Mm-hmm.
Then what happened is my video production company, which I call the Raptor's Den, we were like, okay, our next film, our goals are basically distribution. In other words, we want to do this professionally. What are we going to start with for film.
Mm-hmm.
And research, after doing some research on what you should start with being a first-time filmmaker, just about any source you'll ever contact, from professionals to books to schools,
mm-hmm.
will say do a horror film first.
Okay.
Because horror films have the largest kind of like a cult fan base of any genre of film in the world, by far.
Okay.
So, being a no-name, a distributor might be like, well, it is a horror film. So their odds of basically getting their payoff are increased versus other kinds of films, say like comedy.
Mm-hmm.
So, that's how we decided to do a horror film. Now, what's kind of funny is I kind of turned down the idea of Moral Road twice
mm-hmm.
before I actually accepted it because...
Oh, wait, I have something to say. Boo.
Okay.
Boo. I'm really glad that you came to your senses because
right.
this particular legend is well, besides being legendary in the area and having a bit of a following on the internet, is very intriguing. And the real legend, other than the green light,
mm-hmm.
you know, the legend, which I'm sure I hope we'll get someone to talk about, of, you know, the Indian maiden and the child
yeah,
and
yeah.
all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Is a bit of a, it's a classic.
Yeah.
It's a classic twist on the classic haunting story.
Yeah.
So that's why I really, really, really dig the Morrow Road idea as the, you know, basis of a film.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm glad that you came to your senses, Francis.
Well, what happened was, if you talk down to, because, you know, I can tell you, you know, the actual... you know, what actually are the real rumors versus what is kind of spread on the internet, you know, from naturally from being from the town.
Mm.
Right.
And, of course, we've done a lot of research by interviewing the elderly in the area to researching newspapers. I mean, Morrow Road, you know, was featured on the show Unsolved Mysteries.
Uh-huh.
I had heard
you know,
that. I've never seen
we
it,
we watched
though.
That episode. We watched some, I believe it was Channel 4, some news footage back in the 90s. So we did our research, and the only reason I had turned it down at first was because the problem as far as a film went concerning that legend was that there was no story. It was more of fragments
mm-hmm.
of legends. There was really no story behind Moore Road. It's just more about what you've seen. Oh, there's these bright lights, you know, like orb-like lights that chase you sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, other... you know, documented cases. Oh, there have been, you know, we've seen a lady walking down the road. She has bloody hands.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, honk your horn 3 times. You may hear a baby cry. You may even see the baby.
Mm-hmm.
Or toddler, you know. So, but what's the story
uh-huh.
behind Moore Road as far as the film goes? You know, what do you do with that?
Yeah.
You know, so, in the end... what's kind of ironic about it is that we actually utilized the thing I didn't like about the legend. We utilized it to our advantage,
mm-hmm.
which was, what if we make a film that explores all the theories of Moore Road?
Oh, okay.
And you kind of have to, it's like a mystery now, and you know, where you're like, okay, what actually happened? And throughout the film, you see certain theories. We show you the 9, basically we come down to there's about 9 major theories. And we have all 9 in the film. And you have to kind of figure out which one of these actually happened. And then the film, although based on an actual legend, will take a fictional sort of ending,
mm-hmm.
which is we decide, you know, we kind of surprise you what with, okay, which one was it
mm-hmm.
in the ending. So don't get me wrong, it's not like a, kind of like a Japanese ending kind of film where it's vague,
mm-hmm.
or you figure it out for yourself. It tells you what happened.
Mm-hmm.
And it answers all your questions. And it's very... very startling story, because that's the one thing we also decided about before we had chosen Moore Road. We wrote down on a bunch of index cards. We said, hey, you know what? Because the horror film was new for us.
Mm-hmm.
So we said, okay, what scares us? Oh, there were 6 writers for the story, and then I wrote the screenplay
mm-hmm.
from the story. So some of us got together, and we just started writing down on cards, okay, the dark... naturally, dark scenes in movies can be pretty scary.
Oh, yeah.
And we said, I added, I thought children. Anytime you see a real young kid, especially a toddler, in a story like that, that kind of can send shivers down my spine.
Mm-hmm.
We said if it was to be a story about a ghost or a spirit or something, we kind of thought that a female was more scary than a male. Now, not necessarily, but we thought about movies like The Ring and The Grudge. We're like, you know, a female ghost, there's just something about a female. Maybe it's because, you know, a female's stereotype is so much more, you know, proper, or they just don't belong in such a dirty, scary scenario like this. So we thought, okay. And then the third time Moro was pitched to me, I just happened to be looking at these cards while I was talking on the phone, and it's, you know, they're like, okay, the legend. I'm like, give me the legend again. You know, just run it by me.
Mm-hmm.
And, okay, there's this woman, you know, who may have died, you know, in different theories of how she died. Was she burned? Did she freeze to death? Was she hung? Any one of these kind of visions being very scary.
Yeah, disturbing in its own right. Yeah.
And ultimately, the agony behind her story is that this happens because she's in pursuit of her toddler.
Mm-hmm.
And 99% of the theories say it's a boy, so we've kept that. So we just thought, you know, oh, wow, there's a kid in the story, there's a woman. The way we designed our screenplay, it's about 75% of the film happens in the evening, so there's your darkness.
Mm-hmm.
And it is based on an actual legend, which is exactly what one of our taglines are. Our tagline actually for our film is "She's Still Searching," because that's the direction that the film is, you know, because film has to have a direction, or at least, you know, most films do. And the direction of the film is, you know, where is the baby? And that's her goal. She's trying to find him.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently, you know, she will stop at nothing to do so, including killing people.
Oh.
Now, documented, as far as in real life, there have, at least to our knowledge, never been an actual death on Moore Road. So again, we've taken an actual myth, and myth or not, maybe not a myth, but that's what it would be qualified as.
Mm-hmm.
And we've definitely, you know, to put it in the horror genre, you know, we have it, you know, where it's kind of like the young adults or teenage/young adults are basically running for their lives as this mystery is spelled out right in front of them.
Oh, wow.
So you can see how, you know, we have based on everything that we have researched.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, especially the elderly, that was actually my favorite part of the research, was talking to the older people who claimed the legend kind of came to be around in the 50s. So this is an old legend we're talking about here. And I've since had emails from literally all over the country, from people that have, you know, been to Moore Road. They usually make a summer trip out of it. It was a big thing in the 60s and 70s.
Mm-hmm.
And also we had, because we did want to make it as true as possible, we had to separate the fiction. Like if there was anything, for instance, we could prove didn't happen or whatnot. And a big thing that seems to have happened on Moore Road is pranks. And there are lots of files in the Clay Township Police Department of minor charges from people that had, like, with dressing costumes.
Wow.
And jump out in front of cars.
You know,
and unfortunately,
gosh,
sometimes it's a police car.
Oh, gee, yeah, imagine that.
Right. Even some of my father's friends, you know, told me they'd done it. They'd get in gorilla suits and just, actually, it was a big Moore Road, if you talk to the genre who were in their teens in the 70s,
mm-hmm.
late 60s, 70s, that was the make-out road, even throughout the 80s, I guess.
Yep.
So, but a big thing to do was friends would get together with their friends and try to scare their girlfriends. So, okay, we're going to be here, you know, say 9:45 or midnight or 1 or whatever, and you're going to jump out, you know, and shake the car or something, or flashlights.
And then the chick's going to grab my arm and never let go of it again, and I'm in.
Right.
I'm so, there.
Yeah, I don't know how that leap gets into this. but, yeah, I've run across that a lot.
Yeah.
So some people that we've interviewed, you know, there's actually truth to a lot, what a lot of people say. Maybe, you know, they may have seen lights in the woods or heard something. But what we're trying to figure out was, okay, you know, could these have been pranks? Are there, you know, because some people's stories, you know, are much more strange or unsolved, which really makes you question.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a lady roaming around these woods? Because just somehow they tell their story, it doesn't involve other people.
Yeah.
Or a car, you know, or some of the things that people know about the legend. Again, it is beep your horn three times.
Is it beep your horn three times? For some reason...
Yeah, I've never... Personally, even in all our research, I never heard the flash of lights three times.
For some reason, I know when we were recording Afterlife and we were recording this segment, Tom came to us and said, hey, you know, Morrow Road, that's something you guys have talked about a lot. Let's go out there and test this theory, and I'm going to have my camera right in the car with whoever wants to do it, which ended up being me for some... I don't know why. And for some reason, if I remember correctly, it's all on tape, but... you know, I stopped the car, pulled the keys out, put them on the dash, and then I honked the horn three times. And I think Tom said, hey, flash your lights. Maybe that'll work. I don't know.
Yeah, well, see, what it is some legends are flash your lights, legends are honk your horn. For example, what's the one in Indiana that we were going to go to, but we ended up in that pit in Terre Haute? The Motel 6 in Terre Haute that
we'll
never go to again.
Mm-hmm.
We were going to go up to, do you remember the name of it, Bonnie? The lights. Anyway, they're you're supposed to flash your lights three times, and then you see the ghost light coming toward you, as if it were a lantern swinging. You know, the farmer switching
for Spooklight Hill.
Not Spooklight Hill. Although I like that legend, but no, this is in the northern part of Indiana.
Rensselaer.
That's it. The Rensselaer, Indiana. Legend is flash your lights. So there's a lot of flash your lights ones. There's a lot of honk your horns. This one's a honk your horn, but I can see where, okay, that didn't work. Let's try something else.
Yeah. Why not? What's it going to hurt?
Try all of them.
Right.
That night, we didn't see anything, honestly, Francis. Nothing really happened. And there was who knows? Now, Doug and Will... You guys have a story about that place, too.
Oh,
Yeah, well, one of the things, though, Francis, and this it illustrates also how popular this legend is in Michigan. I remember one night we were out there, Francis, and you've probably seen this yourself, being from that area. I don't remember who was with us. It was a few of us that went out there, and this is before they paved it over, but it was still a dirt road. We're out there, and we're looking for lights or whatever. We're just trying to we're taking photos and just talking about stuff. And all of a sudden, we hear dun, 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 and we hear a tractor kind of thing coming along.
Oh, this is hilarious.
And all of a sudden, there's this a hayride going on, Francis. If I had to take a stab at the title of it, it would have been the Haunted Morrow Road Hayride or something like that. And ironically,
we weren't invited to it, but we showed up anyway. We crashed the party.
But imagine this, it was right around Halloween, too. I mean, I don't know what these guys were thinking, but they put it right around Halloween.
Let's take a hayride up Morrow Road at Halloween.
Oh, that's a big thing.
I mean, I thought the 4th of July would have been a better date to do this, but apparently Halloween was, you know, it was more of a, it would have captured the mood more.
Well, considering the legend is, you know, there's feet of snow in the legend.
Yeah.
I guess it's closer to Halloween, but still that would be more January, February-ish. But,
well, I remember the funniest part was there's these people... okay, this is the haunted... I mean, I'm going to be the narrator on the hayride for a minute. This is the haunted Halloween Morrow Road death metal scary ride, right? And here, you know, here we go, okay, and here comes stuff. And I don't know if they had people set up on the road to jump out or not. Maybe we were those people by default, right? But these people come by, and there's a bunch of people with flashlights, cameras, head flashlights, flux capacitors, whatever we have going there, right? And I can imagine the look on these people's faces as they come by. Of course, we're like, hi, how you doing? Good evening. We're just human people trying to find ghosts here. But, I mean, we had no idea what was going on. That just illustrates how popular this legend was, though, is that they actually have hay rides around this thing. I mean,
Will and I had gone out to Morrow Road simply to take a picture of the sign That's all we wanted was a picture of the sign that says Morrow Road.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right.
And so we pull up. I think we ended up taking the picture afterwards, but I said, oh, well, we got to go up and, you know, see if there's any activities,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
So we drive up there, and we were in the death escort,
mm-hmm.
and it comes to a halt, and we rolled the windows down, and you could hear, you know, the nighttime sounds. It was nighttime, and you could hear the crickets chirping and different things going on. And but everything was like still. There was no wind. It was just really creepy and dark out there. And all of a sudden, you couldn't hear the sound of any
crickets.
Nightlife.
Yeah,
there was
right.
no nighttime sound.
Absolute silence.
Complete silence.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the silence was deafening because we're like, do you hear anything? No. And then all of a sudden, you could hear the sound of footsteps. Behind the car,
mm-hmm.
right? As if there were footsteps behind the car. Somebody's walking up on the car to kill us. And and we're sitting there. We're in the death escort. Already
yeah.
it's got an ominous name. And we're on Morrow Road, which already has an ominous presence.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no sounds from the woods whatsoever, which is unusual.
Right.
And it was just really, really, really nerve-wracking. Then you get these sounds of footsteps slowly. Coming up to the car.
Mm-hmm.
On my side.
Of course, it was his side, so I wasn't as worried, but he was really worried.
Like, well, better him than me. All right.
So yeah. I didn't have a rear view mirror.
No.
Well, I did have one, but it was in the back.
Well, this is the death escort. I mean,
right.
you know, it's a death car.
Right. So I couldn't be watching in the rear view mirror because it was physically, you know, in the back of the car.
Mm-hmm.
So we're looking in the, you know, the little, like,
side view mirrors,
mm-hmm. right? We're looking in the side mirrors. And, of course, you get a limited field of vision.
Mm-hmm.
And we didn't see anything. Neither of us saw anything. So Will's like, okay, I'm going to count to three, and then we're going to turn around and look and see who's coming up on the car.
I'm going to take a picture at the same time.
Right, and you're going to take a picture. So, and of course, I'm saying, well, you know, they say when there's a Bigfoot sighting, that all the sounds come to a complete stop, but usually you get this atrocious smell along with the Bigfoot sighting that
mm.
we didn't smell anything. So,
mm.
So I'm expecting a Bigfoot. He's expecting a killer. And both of us were expecting, you know, a woman in a bloody dress cradling her baby.
Mm-hmm.
And so one, two, three, and whoosh! I mean, we turned around simultaneously as fast as we could,
mm-hmm.
and the sounds just instantly stopped, and there was nobody there.
Hmm.
And the crickets started again.
And the crickets started immediately, like mid-swoosh, mid-turning around. The cricket noises started again.
I think it was Francis out there doing research for the film, and he just saw a couple of unfortunate people. That he's like, I want to see how scared these people get. I'm going to tap on the car. I'm going to walk up and mess with them a little bit. I think we caught him finally.
Yeah, you get the cone of silence over our car.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it was definitely, that was the scaredest I've been at pretty much on any hunt
mm.
ever, was when there were no sounds whatsoever.
Right.
Yeah.
The idea you had prior, there's a recipe for a reality show.
If you could just get the crickets trained out there, I'm telling you, it would work really well.
Yeah.
Because we were upset. It was an upsetting experience.
And these guys came back and told me this like as soon as it happened, Francis. They're like, okay,
right.
you never believe what happened this time. And I'm like, and this was like, if I remember correctly, this was soon after we went out there for the filming of Afterlife.
Right.
It was not too long after that. So I was like, all right, nothing's going on out there. There's, you know.
You had written it off.
I did the experiment. I faced my fears. I'm a bigger man now. I'm over this thing. And these guys come out, they come back with this like, okay, look, something was walking behind the car. There was no one there. We have no idea what's going on. So it's an interesting legend. It's obviously, it's been something, and you say, Francis, that, you know, that the people started talking about this more from the 50s, you said. Am I correct?
Well, our research, you know, seems to mark that as the beginning of when the... anyone started talking about the road being haunted.
Mm-hmm.
Because really no one, there was hardly anyone on the road before that.
Mm-hmm.
That road used to be not only as you remember it before they paved it, but it used to be also twice as narrow.
Mm, oh yeah.
And there were no houses on the road. It was a mud path
mm-hmm.
Kind of road where I guess the games in the 50s and 60s, and even throughout the 80s, were, hey, can you get your vehicle all the way through without getting stuck?
Wow.
So, you know, you always have these, even some of the greatest four-wheel drive vehicles will get stuck, so towing companies, I think, did pretty well. Also, thanks to the road. But, yes, I mean, there's no exact, you know, date.
Mm-hmm.
In the, you know, I can't say, was it 51 in March or anything. Everyone just seems to, the 50s. No one has ever reported anything earlier than that. Probably, my guess being because there was no one ever going to the road before that.
Well, it's still, even to this day, even with it being paved over, Francis, it's still a pretty sparse area. There's not too many houses on the road still.
Road is very scary.
Yeah, it's still,
I mean, paved, especially at nighttime, because pavement is kind of irrelevant in the night.
Uh-huh.
You just go down the road, and you're just like, wow. You know. In fact, when we had, back in, I want to say last summer,
mm-hmm.
we had, I don't remember what draft we were on of the screenplay, but we had come to a hurdle where we needed to make it longer, because many people know one page of a screenplay is equivalent roughly to 1 minute of film.
Mm-hmm.
So we wanted to do a feature-length film, not a short film or anything under that.
Mm-hmm.
And our early drafts, you know, were only 79 pages, and many festivals it takes 90 minutes, you know, or more to qualify.
Yeah.
Somewhere around there. So we had, you know, this quote-unquote at the time, what we thought was a real solid screenplay. But, you know, how do you expand it without, you know, putting in useless information? We all know those moments in movies where you're just like, okay, well, why did I just watch that scene?
The first 190 minutes of The Others.
Yeah.
if it's a 195 minute film, it's 190 minutes of useless stuff, 5 minutes of good stuff.
I take it you don't like it,
right,
Doug?
Yeah.
So
I'm glad to hear that you had more stuff and you just needed some a few things here and there, not the other way around like the people who wrote The Others.
Well, our I can't get into it too much, but in a nutshell, the problem we had was our timeline in the movie was so tight where it was like you couldn't insert anything. Let's say you could even come up with a good idea.
Mm.
It wouldn't make sense because certain people were in certain places by certain times.
Yeah.
So what we ended up doing, the answer to that was original draft only had 6 theories. The other 3 theories we didn't include originally. At the time, actually, it was because of cost.
Mm-hmm.
This was before the film took yet another leap. So that was the only reason they were cut in the first place. We just didn't think we could afford, you know, how to shoot them.
Mm-hmm.
One involved fire, you know, and we're talking all kinds of things.
Yeah.
So the answer became, you know, get the other 3 theories back in there, along with some other things we did, too. But before we come up with that, we were stumped. I mean, I was stumped. That's kind of my job for the screenplay, to come up with that. And I was just stumped, you know, with what to do. And my fiancé is going to be doing all the CGI in the film, so hence all the orbs and all the flying things.
Oh, okay, cool.
We took a walk, starting at the south end of Morrill Road, at roughly, I want to say it was about 10 o'clock p.m., 10:30.
Mm-hmm.
And we just walked all the way from the south end, which is intersects with Holland Road, and to the north end, which I believe is Shea.
Yeah.
And that's where we came up with these ideas, because when you walk down that road and you just see, it's just something about the shape of the trees, the size of the trees, how condensed the trees are. I can't imagine it, you know, 30 years ago when there was even more trees. And for the most, the left side of the road is still untouched.
Mm-hmm.
So you can, if you look to the left, I mean, you could just imagine exactly what it used to look like.
That would be the west side of the road,
yeah.
Right?
Yes, mm-hmm. The west side.
That is untouched.
Near the south, you know,
near
houses
south
are
end.
Starting to go in.
Right.
Well, there
but,
is.
But even the houses that are going in, for the most, are large property houses where mm-hmm. they have a real long driveway, and the house is kind of
way back
in the
there.
Back.
Yeah, you don't even know there's a house there half the time. Is it just?
No. You can't even see them in the summer when all the foliage is there. You can't see them.
Yeah.
Really that well.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, you know, and there it was generating ideas for us, you know, the actual road. I believe we thanked the ghost when we were done. We always have a little joke that our ghost, you know, will kill us if we write a bad script.
Well, let's hope it was walking with you and heard you.
Right, exactly. There is a, I know also on that road, we've cited it every time we've been there, there's a lodge on that road also.
I talked with the owner of the lodge.
You talked to the owner of the lodge there? There's a lodge that's right off the... And I think that would be on... Okay, if you're coming...
The lodge is on the east side.
It'll be on the east side?
Yeah. Yes. If you're going north on Morrow, it's right. And I talked with the owner, and he does say... Now, it's like a hunting lodge. He lives there through year-round, but during the hunting seasons or fishing seasons or something, I don't know, people actually go there from all across Michigan and other states and stay there with him, and they go do their hunting and fishing or whatever.
Mm.
So it is in use as a lodge.
Mm.
And I spoke with him on one occasion,
yeah.
Only one occasion, and he did say that he hears... not very often, like maybe once or twice a year, he'll hear a baby crying in the woods.
Wow.
Right.
And I'm like, doesn't it scare you? And he says, well, it never came after me or anything, so no.
Well, how intimidating is a crying baby, really?
Well, right, yeah. It's kind of freaky, but
well,
not,
yeah, of course.
Yeah. But not intimidating.
A ghost crying baby, yeah, that might be a little scarier than an actual crying baby.
Right.
I mean, an actual crying baby is more irritating than it is scary.
I'm not a father. You got it, yeah.
There you go. I'm not that's me telling you how much of a parent I'm not going to be right there.
I think what happens is that, you know, in the Morrow Road case,
mm-hmm.
if you hear a baby crying, and you know the legend is associated with, you know, this, I guess you could say evil. I mean, people don't know. But this, you know, ghost that is searching for him, or this toddler, you kind of worry that, okay, if you can hear the baby, you know, well, maybe the ghost can hear the baby, and how far away is she?
Mm-hmm.
And, because our film kind of has sometimes the parental instinct of, you know, what any mother or father would do, you know, to find your child. So imagine you find your child in the hands of someone else.
Oh, yeah.
And now, on top of all this, you make it this ghostly story where there's just so much more mystery. You hear a baby crying and you just don't want to be there.
Well, yeah.
So, personally, I have never heard a baby cry. And it's funny, there's always your scientific approach on any legend. Because, you know, Moore Road has been investigated, according to the research we've done, by scientists. They've even had a psychic, you know, come in. I mean, you know, the scientists tried to say that, hey, maybe when people hear babies crying, it might be cats fighting.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't know about you. I happen to have four cats, and I know what cats fighting sounds like, and it's very distinctive.
Mm-hmm.
And it does not, in my opinion, it does not sound anything like babies crying. Cats, when they get in fights, it's just this crazy cat fight, you know?
Yeah.
And then they try to say, you know, explanations for the orbs. Well, I might quote this scientific word wrong, but if I remember it right, it was some of the trees in the woods are what they call, it has a kind of bark that is bioluminescent.
Oh.
I hope I said that right.
It sounds
correct. Which means
right.
Under certain conditions, I mean, the temperature has to be perfect. A lot of the weather, just the conditions have to be so perfect, and the humidity at a certain level. And what can happen is the bark can glow in certain areas. Now, and they say that's a fact. Okay. Again, okay, but what about, you know, almost everybody's descriptions when they say they see orbs, they don't just say they see them in the woods, they follow them.
Well, yeah.
Right.
So to me, you know, how is that an explanation?
Well, also, if you're going to see glowing bark, like you just said, it's just going to be stationary.
It'll be stationary. And I've seen the orbs, and they're moving. I mean, they're not stationary.
Well, yeah, we've often been on that road, Francis, and
But they've never chased us.
Nothing's like, said, I'm coming to get you. Or anything. But we've seen a lot. I mean, this has happened a couple times. On that road, you'll see headlights from cars sometimes.
Right.
That's natural. That's just something that happens all the time. You'll see the lights and be like, okay, is this a cop finally that's going to throw us out of here? Or, who's this coming down the road? And a lot of times you'll see them, the headlights, the motion will, they'll veer off. They'll turn. The automobile will turn, right? But there has been a couple times where the lights came out there and, usually you see, if it's a nice car, it's a maintained car. You're going to see two headlights, right? You're going to see two of them.
Right.
You're not going to see just one. But every once in a while, we'll see something. We'll see one light, usually. And it won't do that motion where it turns off. We'll just keep looking and looking, and it'll just kind of, like, fizzle out a little bit, right? And there's been times where we've actually just drove down there.
We have done this, yeah.
Got in the car and drove down there and found nothing. And we're like, well, it can't be much farther down. Where's this thing at? We drive all the way down. So, and there's no way to prove that, whether it was an orb or whatever, a light thing or whatever it was. But these were things that just kind of caught us off guard a little bit, too, on that road. So, along with all the stuff that you've talked about, as far as Morrow Road's concerned, Francis, it is, if anything, it is a creepy area.
Even in the daytime.
Yeah.
Our film, another neat thing about our film is that we have a lot of historic value to this film, because almost all the theories do say that when this ghost died, when this lady died, I should say, before she was a ghost, was the late 1800s.
Mm-hmm.
I know our movie, in the scenes, it's like literally 1890.
Mm-hmm.
Through 1893, you get to see this, parts of this three-year span of what happens in the film. So one of our challenges in the film, too, is, everything has to look 1800s, which right away we knew, okay, this is going to be, your budget's going to, this isn't going to just be some, super easy film to shoot. Well, I don't even know if there's such thing as that, but let's just say,
that presents a challenge.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
A particular challenge of historic accuracy.
Right.
Some films ignore. Me personally, because I'm not, too attuned to history, I'd probably be one of those people I wouldn't notice something, like, say, if a film had something historically incorrect. But I do know people that are like, what? Look at this thing. They didn't have those yet. Or that's not what they look like. I mean, I know some people that are so anal.
Yeah. They didn't have
things like that, where they're just like, those weren't invented until 1940.
Right.
So we really had to watch it. Like, for instance, one of our first drafts, there was a scene where there's a bale of hay in there. And in the story, it was a middle-class household, this woman is in, not a fancy one. Which is why they're in the middle of in the middle of nowhere. Moore Road essentially is in the middle of nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
So, I have a lot of people read these scripts that catch all these kinds of errors. They're like, they didn't have bales of hay. They had them. Very few people, very rich kinds of farm production companies and things had them, but they didn't bale hay yet. So the hay should be in piles. Okay.
Wow.
So it's things like that that make, writing historic film a challenge. Don't get me wrong, the film, 90% of the film takes place in modern. You'll see the modern, the cast, the stars, everyone's from, modern times.
Mm-hmm.
But when we see these theories, naturally, it's almost like a flashback.
Yeah.
A theoretical flashback, literally. And they're always in the 1800s, of course.
Mm-hmm.
So, all that, and I don't, I also think that there's something about history that's even scarier when you see films, like horror films, that are based, from any time older than now.
Uh-huh.
I think there's something about it, because it's kind of like the communication was not as great.
Mm.
So in history, if something happens on this road, what are you going to do?
Yeah, you can't grab it. You can't grab your cell phone and call somebody and go, "Hey, man, I just saw a lady covered in blood carrying a baby on the road, and I went up to talk to her, and
you know, and there's just something about, there's just everything about it, you know, and I think, well, what makes a good horror film, what can make a good horror film is when you see things that you're not used to seeing, because if it's foreign to you or at least unfamiliar to you, there's something that much more freaky about it.
Mm-hmm.
So now when you see these 1800 scenes and the way Barnes, just the way everything looks is unfamiliar to you.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that adds to the suspense and the mystery to our film.
Well, it adds to the uncertainty as far as the viewer is concerned, in my opinion. I mean, obviously, nobody sitting here or anybody other under the phone was alive back then. We weren't physically alive back then. So we have no idea of knowing what it really was like back then.
Right.
So that just adds to the whole uncertainty issue. And I've learned a very important lesson over the last year from somebody. I forgot who said it, but... this man said, uncertainty is always equal with the word death. When you hear uncertainty, a lot of people equate that with death. And that's the idea. That's the idea right there, which is, you know, obviously there's a lot of people are afraid of dying and the concept of death itself. So there's that adds to the whole puzzle, like you're saying, Francis.
Right. Something else about our film is, I think what's neat about our film is...
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are kinds of horror films. I have a hard time answering what kind of film ours is.
Mm-hmm.
I'm better at saying what kind it isn't than what it is, because I think it's kind of unique. But, you know, you have your slasher films. You have your gore films. You have your comedic films, say, like Scream.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where it's kind of more, I think, more comedy than it is funny.
Well, I think they tried to make a serious film, but we all laughed at it.
Right. It's a big thing, I think, going on now. I think it's kind of fading out, you know, but I know what you did last summer, Scream Trilogy. I mean, they're all very similar in writing, where they're not, I guess they're not trying to be funny, but it was kind of coming off a little funny.
Well, I mean, when you're in regards to writing, I didn't really see too much writing there. I mean, it was just a very... We both know, and I mean, hey, this is independent radio. You can say whatever you want. You know, I mean, there wasn't much of a story there. I mean, it was your basic thing. You know, we 2 weeks ago, Francis, we had the guys from Midnight Syndicate on, and they're horror movie musicians, so to say. They write horror movie themes, right? They don't write them for movies particularly, but they just write them because they like that kind of music, right? And we got into like a lot of talking about horror films and stuff like that. And I know I brought up, and I'll bring it up again, we saw it a couple summers ago, was Freddy versus Jason. I'm sure you've heard about that, right?
Oh, and I've seen it.
We all knew what we were walking into. There was no suspense on how, boy, I wonder what's going to happen this time. You know,
right.
They're going to kill people. Oh, my God, wow. We knew what we were walking into, but we knew that it was going to be a great time because, you know, for films like that, it's a lot about crowd interaction and stuff like that in the theater. So even with the films like, you know, Scream and I Know What You Did Last Summer, we're all doing the same thing. We're all going, dude, don't go around the corner. You know the killer's there. Why don't you just get out of the house, man? Get out of there, right?
Right.
So that's what attracts the people. That attracts people to that kind of stuff, I think. I mean, they
Well, it's funny because when it comes down to, you know, opinions and tastes and films, when I kind of find myself is I'm really open. I mean, don't get me wrong, I'll let you know if I don't like a film.
Mm-hmm.
It really would have to bug me to get to that point. But no, I'm not a fan of Scream, but I still respect, I think especially being an independent filmmaker and knowing how much there is to making a film, whether it was studio finance or not. The amount of people it takes to put a film together, you know, the good things that were done about the movie, say perhaps lighting and other things, and acting and things like that. I mean, I'm not a fan of Scream, but I still respect, and no one can deny that it wasn't successful.
Oh, God.
I mean, these films brought in millions, and, you know, spawned two, the sequels were successful as well.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, on that end, I'm just saying, you know, there is, you know, I always try to find something to respect about any film.
Well, they are...
they're not my kind of film.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think they were scary at all, personally. I mean, none of it. Not one scene. You know, and then there's movies like what we looked at, not as a model for our film, but only as a model for the quality of our film. So, like, what made our list particularly? We enjoyed The Ring, The Grudge. We liked the new and the old Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, we watched these films and we're like, okay. You know, we're like, this was disturbing. Why? Why was this disturbing? And we really analyzed them. And I know Texas Chainsaw, I mean, the whole, even that new movie, I believe it was called, is it called Wolf Creek, with the Australian? Basically, kind of reminded me of the Texas Chainsaw, but like an Australian story.
I'm not familiar with it.
Wolf Creek. Oh, I don't remember. That's terrible. But it was a good movie, too. I don't remember because I didn't like it. We've been seeing so many horror films lately, researching them. We've got so many to catch up on still. But anything based on a true story.
Oh, yeah.
Well, that right away. I mean, the Texas Chainsaw's got that going for it. And on top of it, you know, I think everything else about it was phenomenal. How they did the lighting, the angles. And when people ask me, they say, what is your biggest inspiration for this film? It's kind of funny. I tell them, you know what, it's not a movie. I say it's a video game, of all things. For me personally, the scariest thing I have ever seen or experienced were the Resident Evil game series. I will note, not the films.
Right.
The films I didn't personally like at all, only because I wanted to see them like the game, and they made it more of an action film. So I don't think the films were scary.
We were just discussing that Friday night. We were at a concert Friday night, and I bumped into some friends there, and we were talking about video games and stuff like that. And we were talking about horror movies, then we got into video games. And, you know, it's usually those two things are married together nowadays. But we actually brought that up, the same thing. Resident Evil Nemesis is a game I've played at length. And yeah, I'm with you, Francis. And even when I know what's going to happen, it scares the crap out of me. You turn the lights
on. I have a GameCube, which I'm kind of in luck because they make just about every Resident Evil for the GameCube. And I just had a meeting with my production designer. I had another meeting with our makeup artist. And what I do is I show them these games. And I say, look, this is the style. Because personally, now this doesn't mean it hasn't been done. It just means I haven't seen. I have never seen a movie really do the cinematography like those games do. I've seen movies come close, you know, but the way they do the angles in those games, of course, I know it's much easier, you know, for video game designers to put a quote-unquote camera wherever they want, so it's definitely easier to do once the layout's made, but still, to design it. Where they put those cameras, I mean, a lot of it really gives you the feeling you're being watched.
Oh, yeah.
And it might be a scene as simple as you're walking around some little office. There's no creatures or anything even in there. And it's still scary. And especially, and then when you look at the textures of the games, you know, how gritty those games look, I really like that. You know, it's like, you know, there's not even a monster or a creature in this room, and I'm still bothered.
Well, the thing is with those games, too, is there is a degree, I think, and this is what captures that mood, is that there is always this degree of stress, especially the first time you're playing the game, because you don't know if that's going to happen to you.
Right.
So you're walking around an office, and you're like, okay, I'm in an office, I'm looking for, you know, the badge or whatever I need to get to the next level or something.
Right.
And you don't know what's going to happen to you, and you're playing this game. It's not a movie where, you know, you can't control the outcome of what's going to happen.
Right.
You control the outcome of whether you get killed by 400 zombies or not.
Right.
So that's a pretty stressful thing when you think about it.
And so, you know, our challenge, you know, was really, okay, we want to capture, you know, the essence of this video game series, at least. Although our movie is not a zombie movie, you know, that has nothing to do with it. It's the angles. The music is another very critical thing that those games always nail right on the nose. Where it's like, this is perfect. And a lot of it is orchestrated. Some of it's definitely more ambient than what we're looking for, but it's it's, you know, being a video game, of course. But my film composer, Jeff Arwady, you know, I mean, this guy's got his master's degree from Central Michigan, and he's currently pursuing his doctorate at MSU.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, thanks to him and some of the professor he knows, you know, we've scored an orchestra for our film, a full orchestra.
Oh, wow.
You know, which is not common on independent films, simply because I learned you can't afford them.
They're very expensive. You can imagine.
You know, he basically knows somebody, and that person runs, you know, the orchestra we're going to use, and we talked about it, and you know, how to do this, and what it's for, and next thing you know, we got it all set up, so we have this full-blown orchestra, including a 60-member choir.
Wow.
That
so
is
it's
really
like,
cool.
I forget the number, I think it's around 145 musicians. Not counting the choir.
Mm-hmm.
You're talking 200 people.
Oh, yeah.
You know, are going to come together just to do our soundtrack. Because this film isn't... You know, that's another thing I notice a lot of newer horror films do that I don't like personally. Unless it makes sense, which I do see sometimes. Where all of a sudden they'll crank a pop track. Often heavy.
Yeah.
And it's like, now, this is nothing against heavy metal or rock or anything. Mm-hmm. It's just... When I hear that music, I mean, I think parties, I think fun,
mm-hmm.
I think concert, the whole concert environment,
mm-hmm.
and I don't think ghosts, I don't think scary, because, you know, it's so, you know, the amount of energy in it and how it kind of, I think it detracts
mm-hmm.
well, in
from what you're seeing.
In the scene, though, where the kids pull up to make out on Morrow Road, I would expect that kind of thing to be coming off their...
Yeah, coming out of the radio.
Of the radio.
Right.
Yeah.
Not orchestra music, but over
that,
over the whole music.
That's dumb movie.
Yeah.
Do it right.
Yeah.
Right.
Where it'll little be an on sound, like sound where it makes sense. You know, the sound is coming from something. Now, for instance, in our film, we do have a band scene. And there's literally a party in the film where you will hear that. I can tell you now that'll be the only place you ever hear it, though.
Right, yeah. Right.
Everything else is like, you know, we got a little 60s kind of flashback scene in our movie, too, where we're going to want some sort of little 60s things coming out of a radio. More for the reason to define the era than,
right.
than for fun.
Than yeah. to be
but
part
it doesn't
of,
last
yeah.
long
yeah.
anyways.
Exactly.
So there's just, you know, music plays such an incredible role in horror films. And... You know, that was another thing I didn't like about Resident Evil. Although Resident Evil, the film, I'm sorry, that's not the game.
Yeah.
The film, I believe they used, what's the matter with me? What's his name? Huge. It'll come to me.
I didn't even see
but,
the film myself.
And it was, I think the idea was good, you know, where they're like, wow, this guy really represents evil things.
Marilyn Manson.
Marilyn Manson.
Yes.
Oh, hey.
Yeah, he scored the first film.
Okay.
Resident Evil. So there are parts of the film I like, because another thing is movies that have the high-tech look, sometimes to me personally that makes sense. There's something about it where it's like, okay, if we're looking at some futuristic kind of technology, you know, and the music's so different, in the future more edgy,
mm-hmm.
kind of like technology is, to me it makes more sense. And that movie definitely, unlike the game, you know, really placed it in this futuristic environment.
Yeah.
Where the game has parts of, you know, that are futuristic. But, you know, where was the mansion?
Yeah.
You
right.
know, the
where
whole
the...
basis
right.
of that entire idea. And
let's take a quick break, though.
Yeah.
While we ponder why they left the mansion out.
Yeah, we can do that. You still want to hang out, Francis?
Can you hang out for just a bit more?
No problem.
All right,
right.
Cool. Yeah, let's
I
take a quick
it.
Break here. We've been cranking out here for a straight hour. This,
I know.
Right? We haven't done this in a while. Yeah, well, before we go real quick, yeah, we did have a cancellation tonight. The people from Corpse were supposed to come on. They had to cancel. We're just going to kind of go on with this. We do have Doug Yerche coming on at 7:30, which is going to be, wow.
Yeah.
We'll talk more about that later. Let's take a quick break. This is Ghostly Talk. I'm Scott L.
And I'm Doug.
I'm Will.
We'll be right back.